Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Bucketheads. This is episode 92. My name is Connor Lamons, and I'm here with my co-host, Justin Golba, as we've got a whole lot of stuff to get to today. Buckeyes are in action. They played a ranked team on, what day was it, Friday? They played A&M on Friday. That did not go their way. They've got Merrimack coming up this week. The Gavitt games are starting. We've got a huge St. John's update today. All kinds of stuff going on, Justin. And I have a reason to believe that what you're about to say next is going to have nothing to do with any of that. Is that correct?
Connor, I'm sad. anybody that knows me, anybody's listened to this podcast even once, because I do this every time, knows I live and die by college basketball. Truly. Not so much wins and losses, Connor. Because my two favorite teams are Ohio State and Kent State. If I lived and died by wins and losses, I'd be dead. But more so, good basketball. Smart basketball. Fun basketball. And the Kent State Golden Flashes did not provide smart, fun, or good basketball against James Madison last Thursday. If you follow college basketball, you know what happened. They went to double overtime, lost to James Madison. Connor, do you know, in regulation, what the score was with 3 seconds left in the game?
I do. They were up by, I believe they were up by, what, 5 points with 3 seconds left? Is that correct?
Five is correct, Connor. Five is correct. They let a full court pass happen, and this kid, who I do not know, hit a three. And then they committed a foul underneath the basket. And then let a wide open layup happen. And they went to overtime. In overtime, they were down by five with 10 seconds left. And they tied the game. And then they lost in double overtime. It's truly one of the most insane games I've ever seen. Just in terms
game of the
of
year.
Game of the year. Probably going to stay that way. Maybe not. Probably not. But it was tough to watch. I'm not going to lie to you. As a fan of college basketball, it would have been great if one of the teams wasn't Kent State. It was a home game. That made it worse. Much worse. Yeah, Connor, okay. You could talk, you know, we talk about X's and O's on here sometimes. If you are up by two, with 1 second left in the game and you're underneath your own basket inbounding the ball. What do you do? What do you make sure you don't do? Put it that way.
I would barely touch anybody. I would just get a body in front of somebody and not even touch them. Make them take the shot.
I wouldn't even, Connor. Well, I'm talking about for Kent State when they had the ball inbounding it because they committed a foul. Connor, they can throw the ball the length of the court out of bounds.
I thought you were talking about how you defend the – oh, okay.
No, I'm talking about on offense when they committed the foul.
Oh, yeah. You can just hoist the ball up. You can hoist the ball up 30 feet in the air. Eventually, it's going to come down, and somebody's got to touch it. And then the
– Amen, Connor.
Clock starts.
Amen, Connor. Rob Senderoff is a fantastic coach. This is not an indictment on coaching. It's an indictment on players not executing. But that was tough to watch. And not to mention – if you did not watch the game, the layup to win the game or to tie the game to go to overtime, there wasn't anybody in his area code. those guys, if he was shooting that ball at Kent State, the defenders were in Akron. Okay. Anybody that's familiar with Northeast Ohio will think that joke is funny. Anybody that isn't will not. That's all I got. I don't really want to get into it too much because it is painful. Kent State beating James Madison the same week James Madison beat Michigan State would have been hilariously awesome. Kent State also just beat Fresno State, so like I think Kent State's actually a pretty good team right now, and that's a tough one.
Yeah, that was probably game of the year. I think that might stick as game of the year for quite some time.
I think the game of the year,
Kent State
won personally.
Did you say they played Fresno State after that and won?
Yeah, they played Fresno State Saturday night. So I don't know what that was, a hell of a turnaround, but yeah, they beat them by 10. I don't know if Fresno State basketball, I'll be honest, but
I'm pretty sure I saw an article that said that Boise State, Fresno State, and I want to say, no, not Fresno State. Never mind. Get rid of that. It's Nevada, Boise State, and San Diego State are three Mountain West teams that could get at-large bids, not Fresno State. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, we can run with that narrative too. I'm fully okay with twisting narratives to my advantage. Everyone knows that.
I'm sorry that happened to you, but that is not the marquee basketball program in Ohio. Ohio State is the marquee program in Ohio.
You're right. Our podcast about Dayton is starting.
Unfortunately, the marquee program in Ohio lost as well. So it's a tough time to be a fan of the marquee basketball program in the state of Ohio.
Northwestern. Dayton.
What?
Northwestern. That's the joke I was making. Connor, yeah,
I had money on Dayton. I thought they would win that game too.
I actually kind of did too. I didn't have money on them, but I did think they'd win. Fighting Boo Boos.
All right. Okay. Anyway. All right. Ohio State played Texas A&M on Friday night. I wish I could say in front of a sold out crowd. It was not a sold out crowd. It was nowhere near a sold out crowd. I cannot tell you how immensely disappointed I am. In Ohio State's fans, they did not show up to watch them play a top 15 team in the non-conference, a home and home. Like, you don't get home and homes in college basketball anymore. I'm not going to get mad at Ohio State fans and be like, you guys are goddamn shame. Not like that. But like, you don't get home and homes in college hoops anymore. Like, coaches are too much of cowards to play at other people's arenas. Like, that is why you see so many contracts where you get like, and I'm just pulling schools out of the blue, like you'll get like a Purdue versus a Gonzaga and they'll play like in Chicago because Purdue does not want to play at the Kennel and Gonzaga does not want to play at Mackey. Like, neither, they don't want to do a home and home. Even if it's like, hey, we'll play at your place, we'll come, then you'll come back to us. Like, they don't want to do that. So to get Ohio State to agree to a home-and-home with A&M, for A&M to say, yes, we'll come play in Columbus, and then Ohio State to go play at College Station, like, you just don't see that. It was a very unique opportunity for fans to see a team in person that they may never see in person again, a top 20 team, a really good team. And, I mean, they had, like, 12,000 people in the stands, which is, like, you know, that's about how many they'll get probably against, like, Northwestern on like a Friday night in like February. So, I mean, it wasn't like a pitiful crowd for a typical game, but for the type of game it was, I expected that there would be so many more people there. But also, shout out to the Buckeye Nut House.
Yeah, awesome.
The students packed it in. The students filled it up. All of their, you know, the student section was completely full. It was, you know, the rest of the seats that were noticeably bare.
Well, and here's my thing, Connor, and this is where I get pissed off. All I heard, and you heard as well, probably more than me because you're at the games, from last year was there's no good home games. There's no good non-conference home games. You expect us to go to these games. That's why I don't get season tickets, blah, 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 whatever. So now they give you a good home game, and you don't go. And this is why Ohio State isn't going to schedule home and homes. There's no advantage. There's going to be an advantage for Texas A&M next year when Ohio State has to go play them there because that's a very good crowd. That's a very good home environment for Texas A&M. And I know, and there's half the people listening to me say this are going to say, well, that's because Texas A&M is top 15. Okay, congratulations. You're a fair weather fan. I don't care. Go to the game. Ohio State, notoriously, even if they're not competing for national championship, this is still, outside of last year, a team that is notoriously going to the tournament and winning 20 games. Go to the games and support them and watch them. I'm a Browns fan, brother. You can't tell me nothing about teams winning. I watched my team go 1-31 for 2 years. I watched every single game. Some people might call me an idiot for that. Some people might say I have no life or no friends. They'd be right. I still did it. You know, I'm getting off topic. Anyway, I'm just saying.
Fewer people at the game. The amount of people at the game was not my main takeaway by any stretch of the imagination.
No, but I'm just saying, like, you can't complain about them having home games and then not go.
I have definitely seen people say, you know, the tickets are too expensive to go watch Ohio State play basketball. Ohio State is, you know, generally a good team, a good program, but not fantastic. The amount of money they're charging to go watch the basketball game, way too much. And then I'll see people online saying, you know, oh, the tickets, you could get into this game for $7. That just shows you how shitty this team is. I'm like, yo, people are pissed off the tickets are too cheap. People are pissed off tickets are too expensive. Like,
yeah,
I'm just
mad.
You know, I don't typically expect people to like pack it in. I don't expect them to get 16,000 people in the seats every single game. But in my mind, I thought like this game, the home Purdue game and the home Michigan game, I thought like those potentially could be like close to sellouts. But I guess maybe with the A&M game, if people are still in football mode, maybe people didn't even realize that basketball was playing. That probably means that they don't care about basketball that much if they didn't realize they're playing. But I digress. Little disappointed in the crowd. Definitely was not a home court advantage. But if we're being honest, the Schottenstein Center is only a real home court advantage maybe like once or twice a year.
Yeah, and look, I get it, right? You do want the program to be better. A lot of fans, you know, were fans through the Thad Matta era where they were, you know, playing these top 10 games. I get all that. But the way you help a program get better, the way you help, you know, do your part as a fan, I'm doing this in quotes, obviously it's a podcast, but I'm doing that in quotes, like, go to the game, be loud, help, you know, home court advantage. I don't think there's any sport in America that has, I say America because, you know, you watch some soccer events overseas and it's insane. But in America, I think the best home court advantage sport is college basketball because you're so close.
I agree.
The game are crazies. Like, I think in the NFL, I think it's absolutely irrelevant. I think in the NBA, kind of. I think college football, for real. I think baseball, maybe, just maybe in Philly. But anyway, I digress. But I think college basketball, there is a for sure advantage. You've seen Purdue. We're in the Big Ten. You've seen Michigan State. You've seen these schools. And I know Purdue and Michigan State have been better programs. I get all that. But what I'm saying is that's how you can go do your part, be loud, help, you know, help your team get.
Oh, yeah.
You know, get past that hurdle.
The students are sitting within like you can.
So
if you're in the front row of the student section at Ohio State, if you sneeze, you might get the other head coach sick. Like, that is how close you are. I almost got punched in the face by Bruno Fernando when I was a senior because I was so close to him that he could hear me, and the other coaches had to turn him around and sit him down because he was looking like he fouled out. And as he was walking back to the bench, we were doing the left right, and it was kind of like fucking with him. He didn't want to step as we were telling him to step. So then when he got back to the seat, I was like sitting right behind the empty seat he was gonna sit on, and I just kind of like. I like used my hand to like tap the seat, and I said, "Right here, big boy, we got a spot for you right here." And he just stood there. And he just stood there and stared at me. I mean, like, again, close enough that if you sneeze, you're sneezing out. Like, that's how close you are. And the coaches just kind of turn around, like, all right, man, just come on, sit down. I'm like, man, if this man punches me, I definitely am going to need like reconstructive surgery on my face. But he also is going to be suspended for like the rest of the season.
Yeah, he can't be hitting fans.
That is how close the students are in most student sections to the visiting bench. Like, you are that close that, like, Bruno Fernando really wanted to go home because we were being really obnoxious because we are that close. And as long as you're not touching them or like yelling profanity in their ears, like, you typically can get away with most stuff. And that will have an impact.
For sure. Yeah, the left right was anyway, a good one, because then they could do what they're gonna stop walking. Like, yeah,
exactly.
They stop walking, they look weird. Like, yeah, no, that's a good one.
Yeah, he wasn't happy with that. Anyway. Back to the A&M game. We have avoided talking about the actual gameplay that happened against A&M. I do not think that Ohio State played terribly. I don't think that they played great. I also don't think that Texas A&M played great. I think the bottom line difference is that A&M rebounds the basketball. Their guards, who aren't huge, rebound the basketball. A&M takes lower percentage looks. But they do it, and as soon as the ball is up, all five guys, including the shooter, are attacking the rim. And they are looking for offensive rebounds. They're looking for putbacks. And they just absolutely bullied Ohio State on the glass. I thought Ohio State pretty much outshot A&M from start to finish. There were some lulls in the Ohio State offense. The first half completely was a lull for the Texas A&M offense. But I thought from start to finish, Ohio State was like the better offensive team, but A&M just got so many second chance opportunities because they were just bullying Ohio State on the glass. And it was such a big difference that, like, I think that was the difference.
Yeah. The three takeaways I had from watching the game was one, absolutely the same as you, the rebounding was an issue. I put in the preview, Henry Coleman could be a problem. Henry Coleman was a problem. The second one was, there cannot be a game this season against any type of quality team where Jameson battles in foul trouble. They just losing him to be able to stretch the floor, to be able to shoot the ball. You know, there's lulls in that second half where all you wanted to see was a Jameson battle three, and he just wasn't even on the floor for some of it. Jameson battle is going to be, I think, the key to this entire team. And then there were times where the offense, and this happens, they got way too Bruce Thornton reliant. They just kind of all set. They just let Bruce Thornton kind of ISO out or whatever the case may be. Kind of the ball got stagnant. They stopped moving it and they just got Bruce Thornton shot the ball 20 times. I don't love that. I know he's your best player. He's probably not your best offensive player. I think Jameson Battle probably still is, but 20 times and he was 8 for 20. It's not the most efficient. You know, he shot, I think he was, what was he from deep? Like 2 for 8 or something? 2 for 9? Do you have the stats for
him? Yeah, he was. I do. I have 2 for 8 from three. Yeah, so 25%. He was what, 7 of 12 from inside the line.
Yeah, so that's good. I don't think the free throws were a problem. I mean, they missed 7. A&M also missed 7. They just got to the line.
I just think those
numbers can even out. They shot 80% against Oakland, 24 for 30. They just didn't shoot it. I don't know. I gotta see. That's just. There's been one game they shot it well, one game they shot it poor.
They missed some timely free throws.
They
though.
Did. They did miss timely free throws.
Second half, I think I think Akpara missed the front end of a 1-1. I believe.
Yeah, he did.
I don't have the total play by play in front of me. I just have the stats. I think he missed the front of a 1-1. I think Scotty missed the front of a 1-1. I believe Zed had a dunk that I think put them up like 2 or 3, and the free throw would have made it 3 or 4. He missed that.
And after, yeah, it was after a commercial too.
So they missed some timely free throws. I think that, you know, that needs to be better. And they also just, they didn't get to the line as much as A&M did.
Right. I mean, they got to the line a lot. They got to the line half the amount of times they did against Oakland. Now, obviously, the Oakland game was close, so they got to the line at the end of games, you know, more, end of the game more. But, yeah, they got to the line 30 times against Oakland, just 17 against A&M. So, And with as many dribble drive guys as they have, you know, Roddy Gale is going to attack the paint. Bruce Thornton is going to attack. Scotty Milton is going to attack. Devin Royal, if he, you know, hasn't really taken much of an offensive role, but if he is, he's going to attack. They need to be getting to the line more. But plus big guys like Zed Key and Nakpara. 10 blocks. That's good.
Yeah, I think Devin Royal had like 3 blocks in like 7 minutes or something. But I honestly think that their biggest flaw in this game was the rebounding. And the rebounding, I don't think the rebounding is just, well, I know it's not just like an effort. It's not solely effort. It's not like Ohio State just didn't want the rebounds as badly as A&M. There's more that goes into it. It was pointed out after the game by Chris Holtman. It wasn't really an excuse. It was basically saying, oh, we stunk at this other area, which drug over to this. He basically was saying that neither Bruce nor Roddy could guard Wade Taylor or Tyrese Radford one-on-one. Like, yeah. Tyrese Radford and Wade Taylor, especially in the second half, you know, Bruce and Roddy could not guard them one-on-one. Those two guards just took them one-on-one and said, I'm better than you, and if you don't get some help, I'm going to keep scoring on you. And that's what they did. So then Ohio State, you bring a help defender over. Like, so say Roddy jumps over to help Bruce. The guard takes a shot that's a bad shot. The rebound comes off. But, hey, now there's only 3 guys from Ohio State that are in a position to rebound basketball because you had to pull a help defender over to help Bruce or to help Roddy and vice versa. So their inability to guard A&M's guards made it harder for them to rebound when A&M is looking for that offensive rebound. You've only got 3 guys there looking for the rebound. I hope that makes sense, because that's what Holtman said after the game.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense
to me. And it wasn't like he was saying, well, you know, we were doing this, so we just couldn't get, like, he was saying, like, we didn't guard the ball well enough. And that leaks over to rebounding. Now, Tyrese Radford and Wade Taylor are probably one of the best backcourts they're going to see all year. So 100%. you can say like, these guys stink guarding the ball. And after what we just saw, that is okay, because they stunk in that game. But also, those are really good guards. Like,
right.
I don't think they're going to stink like that every game. That was high-level stuff from Radford and I hope not. That's high-level stuff from Wade Taylor and Tyrese Radford. So, yeah, they kind of stunk guarding the ball, but that's one of the better backcourts they're going to see all year long.
I'm comfortable saying it's the best backcourt they'll see all year long. And that's why it's the same argument, and this argument didn't exactly like hold water throughout the year, but it's the same argument I think I was kind of making, and some people, other people making, after the Duke game last year, where Ohio State just got obliterated because of Duke's height. And we were like, you're not going to see that height again, though. So that's where it's like, you don't have to have the huge like takeaway from it of like, oh, they're going to suck throughout the whole year with this. Well, Wade Taylor and Tyrese Radford, I think I could talk myself into this, that they're top 5 backcourt in the country. Can I talk myself into that? Maybe top 10?
Top 10 probably.
Top 8.5. We'll do that. We'll split in half or something. Well, 7.5 would be half of that. But so I think they're really good. And the biggest thing is they have 9 years of college experience in front of them. While Bruce Thornton and Roddy Gale have 4, you know, they're both sophomores. Ohio State this year, this was brought up to me and I actually forgot this. Ohio State is the 8th youngest team in college basketball.
See, now, so, like, that is not something that I think I'm going to let creep into the narrative this year.
I'm not going to let it creep in there of this year. I'll let it creep in there of this game, because I do think you saw Wade Taylor and Tyrese Radford make experience plays that Bruce Thornton and Roddy Gale, I'm not saying they didn't make, but I don't know. They just look way more comfortable down the stretch. They just really did.
I gotta push.
I'm not gonna use it for back, in February. Like, in February, yeah. But for right now, I'm okay saying.
I won't push back on it like you're wrong, because it, like, those two guards, one is a 5th year. I think Radford's a 5th year, and Wade Taylor is Wade Taylor's a senior, like a 4th year guy. Yeah. I have to verify that. He's at least a junior, but I'm pretty sure he's a senior. They are older than Roddy and Bruce, and you can say those two guys are more experienced than them. However, as the season goes on, nobody, like, even I don't think anybody that is in the interview room, in the media room, I think is probably going to allow that to be an answer this year, is we are a young team, because that was the answer last year when they were really bad. It was, hey, we're letting these guys cut their teeth. We kind of threw them into the water, sink or swim. And all we've heard now is, oh, you know, that year helped them out. That year should help them tremendously. So I don't think that this year, I don't think that they're going to be able to use youth as an excuse for anything moving forward, even if they are statistically the youngest team or the eighth youngest team, because they've got what, four sophomores and
four sophomores.
They've got four sophomores and four freshmen on the roster. So eight of your 13 scholarships are guys that are freshmen or sophomores. I just don't think it can be an excuse this year, because it was the excuse last year.
It was, but also this team is younger than last year's team. Last year's team was weird because they had a ton of experience. They didn't have any experience. They didn't have experience together. It was all like Sean McNeil's a fifth year transfer. Isaac Likely's a senior transfer. Who was the other one? Tanner Holden was a fourth year guy. They were transfer. They just had no experience together. And I do think, just real quick, Bruce Thornton, I agree. Bruce Thornton started every game last year. You know, he kind of went through that teeth grinding stuff. We saw it in January, got out of it in February, and was probably playing his best ball towards the end of the year. So he like went through those peaks and valleys. Roddy Gale hasn't. He still only averaged 15 minutes a game last year, and that was with playing 30 to 35 at the end of the season when he was actually starting. I think we're going to see some Roddy Gale just up and downs, because he didn't play like throughout January, February. Roddy Gale didn't play that much. He wasn't starting at all. Obviously, towards the end of the year, when the injury to Bryce Sensabaugh happened and stuff, he started starting and was playing 35 minutes a game. But that was really just the Big Ten tournament.
He did start the last 11 games, including the four
right
in Indy, because that's there was basically a point where it was like there is no reason to start Sean McNeil anymore. Yeah. This is a lost season. Starting Sean McNeil while Roddy rides the bench just doesn't help this program at all.
Right.
It was like the last 11 games.
Right when you told Zed Key to go get surgery because the season was pretty much lost. Get healthy for next year, stuff like that. But I do think with Roddy, starting 11 games in a whole season is less than 40%. I do think that he's going to go through a little bit of those peaks and valleys just early on as he becomes comfortable being, last year, what was he, the eighth guy? Turning into the second or third option, that's a big jump.
Yeah, I agree. It stinks that they're younger than. The facts are that they're younger now than they were last year. Except that being young this year isn't going to be an excuse, because last year
they're in a very weird spot. If you think about it, they really are.
Because last year they had freshmen who had never played college basketball that were being relied on very heavily, and this year they have sophomores who played, the final 11, 12 games all together, which there aren't very many teams in the country that you're going to find that started, three freshmen their final 10 to 15 games together. So they have more experience collectively, I think, than a lot of sophomores do. And you just can't use youth as an excuse back-to-back years. It's just not going to be accepted. But I guess we've kind of really just like beaten a dead horse on this point. A&M has old players, experienced players. I did not expect them to win this game. I think you did the preview, and I think you picked them to win by three, maybe, but like that kind of seemed like
a chalk game to me, and I gave them the edge because it was at home. To be honest, I expected more of an atmosphere. But to me it was chalk.
I don't think
Marble would have played, I would have predicted A&M to win. I do want to point that out. I don't know what's going on with him. Put it in the preview. He's just not with the team for undisclosed reason. If he would have, and also if Julius Marble would have played, they probably would have won by more. But I would have picked A&M. So I do put that out there.
It's not a game that I really expected them to win. I don't think that a lot of people were either on the fence, like, I don't know, or they were like, no, they're going to lose. So I don't think that losing to a top 15 team should like shock many people, change your expectations that much. But it's important to identify that there are some areas that clearly have to be better. Rebounding has to be better. And that the basis of that, of rebounding better, is going to be, they have to be able to guard man on man without help all the time. Or else you're going to, like what happened in A&M is going to keep happening, where you have to bring a help defender over, you have fewer numbers to get the rebound. And, that's what happened. They just got bullied. I thought that Ohio State shot the ball. They didn't shoot threes for shit. Neither did A&M. Yeah, neither team hit a three in the second half.
It was not a clinic. It was not a clinic from behind the line.
I see. Like, how did they shoot? For the whole game, they were 42%, which is like not great, but not that's fine. It's not great. Awesome. Yeah, from three though, they were 4 of 19. So
and A&M was 3 of 18. So that's
are they, you know, is Ohio State a bad shooting team? I don't think so. I think they're gonna have Jameson Battle, Bruce Thornton, and I think probably Scotty Middleton are gonna be guys that are gonna shoot at least like 35 to 40% from three. Maybe Roddy, but I think he's like 0 for 7 to start the year. So I would maybe I'm not going to put him in that group, but I don't think that they're going to be a bad shooting team. They have been bad so far, but I think through two games, it's a little too soon to make the like to make the conclusion that like this team has no shooters.
I mean,
I'm Alex Rodriguez,
and I'm Jason Kelly
from Bloomberg. This is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So it's just through two games, it's difficult to make conclusions like, okay, the conclusion is this team has no shooters. The conclusion is that, you know, Roddy and Bruce cannot guard the ball. Well, when you put them up against one of the best backcourts they're going to see all year, it is going to be tough to guard the ball. So a little quick to make full conclusions, but there are some areas that they got to clean up a little bit. And it starts on Wednesday, which is when this episode should drop, a day early, against the Merrimack Warriors out of the Northeast Conference. Not going to spend a whole lot of time on Merrimack, but it is a fun non-conference matchup. Merrimack won the Northeast Conference last year, but they had that clause where they were still recently jumped from D2 to D1, so they couldn't play in the tournament. So then Fairleigh Dickinson, who came in second, I believe, in the NEC, got to go to the tournament, and then things happened. And then things happen. So that is the Merrimack team that they're playing on Wednesday, but it's a lot different. I don't know how much you have to add about Merrimack, but they have lost their top three scorers off of a team that really wasn't good offensively last year.
Yeah, it makes it tough. It definitely makes it tough. This is one of those games where it's like work on the things that you struggled with, you know, and just get more comfortable doing those things. To your shooting point, I think Roddy Gale is such an interesting one to talk about because, like, he shot the ball for most of the year poorly from three. Then he just got red hot in the Big Ten tournament and made, like, what was it, like 11 straight threes or whatever he was in the tournament, like 9 for 11 or so, 10 for 12.
I think he then he hit 9 in a row and then missed his last.
So, but then now to start this season, he's been struggling. So it's like, I have no idea what he is shooting the ball. It seems to be pretty streaky, but hopefully those streaks get going here soon in the good way. So, you get Merrimack and then you get Western on Sunday. Those are both kind of get right games. Just, you know, work on what you need to work on, work on your rebounding, work on your all ball defense, work on these things, work on some of your sets to get Jameson Battle better looks. I don't know. Is Tayson Chapman considered a shooter? He's more of a slasher, right?
I'm honestly not sure.
So I don't know if he's going to provide that when he gets back. Did you see him in warmups at all? What can you report from the ground there?
Just that he was doing all the warmups everybody else was. I didn't pay super close attention to, like, is he hitting threes in warmups or not? Because I don't really, put much stock into that.
Yeah, no, I just meant his health.
He does the same warm-up that everybody else does. Layup lines, threes. I don't know if he's dunking or not. He probably is dunking. After they beat Oakland and they post the video where they're in the locker room like dancing and stuff and singing, he was like jumping up and down in the pile. So like I would say, like, at this point he's probably game to game. Like, if on Wednesday they say, like, yep, he's playing tonight, then like it's probably game to game at this point. Like, any day now he probably is gonna play because he's doing the full warm-ups. Obviously he can jump around and stuff on his knee if he was in the locker room clowning around. But I don't. He is the member of that recruiting class that I know the least about, honestly, because
it was late.
The recruitment happened so fast after George Washington decommitted. which is kind of why I laugh a little bit. I chuckle when like people that cover college basketball or cover Ohio State basketball are like, you know, Taysom Chapman is the guy that I've been paying and keeping a close eye on for a while now because I've loved his game. I'm like, man, nobody knew about his game. Like nobody knew anything about him. He committed like there was never even like a, I don't know. Do you get what I'm saying? Like with Devin Royal and like Scotty, there was like months in advance where you're like, okay, like Ohio State is like zooming in on this guy. Like they have a real chance. Like Taysom Chapman just kind of happened. And so I don't know a ton about his game. I don't know if he's a great shooter. I can't answer a ton of questions about him. He was the highest rated recruit of those four, though.
Yeah, I think that's why people say it is like you lost George Washington, who kind of ended up falling in some of the rankings, and you added Taysom. He's like the mysterious one. You know, you don't know a lot about him, but you like what you've seen. And he's like, I mean, he was ranked 33rd in 247 Sports, like their composite. Scotty Milton was 60th, so like he was ranked way higher than Scotty. Scotty was highly ranked on, like, I think On Three had Scotty super high, but maybe ESPN did actually. But
I'm not gonna call anybody out and be like, you don't know shit about Taysom Chapman, but like,
no, I know what you're saying, though. It is funny to hear, like,
there was never a period of time when, like, you know, if you look at the beat writers, like, you know, catching up with, you know, there were so many about Devin Royal. Devin was the big one because he's local.
He's
so like every week,
high on Mr. Basketball
stuff. Every week you'd get an article like catching up with Devin Royal on his recent offers. Like, you know, how did he do at Peach Jam? Da, 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 da. Like there was nothing on Taysom Chapman until he committed.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He's a very highly ranked recruit.
I mean, a lot of it, and I'm not comparing the two games or anything like that, but a lot of it's kind of like Bryce Sensabaugh. Sensabaugh came out of nowhere, and they signed him out of Florida. At the time, he was a 3-star. Nobody really knew because he was injured. Nobody really knew what he was going to become, and then obviously, you know, became a first-round pick. But that's a similar vibe I get of like just
– I kind of tempered my expectations with him, though, because kind of similar to Gene Brown last year, like when you missed the start of the season, when you missed the last few weeks of practice, and then you missed the start of the season – It's tough to like jump back into things. I'm wondering like if Taysom Chapman doesn't come back before the Alabama game, which I think is 3 games from now. It's in 12 days.
As we're recording this, it's 12 days away. I mean, it's day after Thanksgiving.
Or no, Alabama is the 24th actually. So yes, Alabama is the 24th. So, you know, 10, 11 days away. If he's not back by the Alabama game, I don't think that they would throw him into the Emerald Coast Classic. Like, if he's not back by Western Michigan, then I don't think you would see him until after the Emerald Coast Classic because it's going to be difficult for him to force himself into that rotation and, like, pick things up right where the rest of the team is when he hasn't, you know, he hasn't played yet this year. He's never even played in college. At least Gene Brown had, like, collegiate experience. So I would definitely temper expectations about Taysom Chapman. I definitely have. When I think about the team and the rotations, honestly, I kind of think of Taysom Chapman as a non-factor until I see differently. Because I don't know what level he's going to contribute this season. That's a tough time to get a knee surgery.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think just the experience of Dale Bonner, you know, they're going to want him out there. He's a really good defender. He needs to bring a little more on offense right now. But other than that, again, I just don't get like, you know, the people with like the two. You can have concerns, obviously, you know, the A&M game, there are legitimate takeaways from that. But, like, you know, there are people talking, oh, another year, same old, you know, I'm done with this team. It's like, it's been 2 games. I don't have any true takeaways from 2 games. I don't. Talk to me on December 20th. I'll have more for you. Yes, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the backcourt of Radford and Wade Taylor, I've been thinking through it, and I think it's the best one in the Big Ten. Like, if they were in the Big Ten, they'd be the best one in the Big Ten.
Yeah, at least to what I've seen from AJ Hogarth, because it's been bad.
I'm right. I'm a longtime AJ Hogarth hater. I always have been.
You're on the right side right now because it's been bad.
I've never thought that he's as good as everybody's. Love how just AJ Hogarth is just taking a stray out of nowhere right now.
Well, yeah, out of nowhere. He stinks. I mean, he needs to be better. That's just, trust like, me. I'm very tuned into Michigan State Twitter for some reason. They feel the same way.
So like, I think that like A&M is like would be the best backcourt in the Big Ten if they played in the Big Ten, and I don't think that's like a stretch at all because as you were talking, I was thinking, no. And I'm like, I'm like, no, they're better. Those two are better than Hogarth and Walker. I'm like, they're definitely better than Lawyer and like, they're better than Lawyer and Braden Smith.
Yeah,
literally the only one that I could think of, I'm like, maybe is Jameer Young and Deshaun Harris Smith in Maryland. Like by the end of the year, that duo might be really, really good.
Yeah, but right now,
no. But right now, no, the A&M's duo is better. So no reason to panic. The panic button isn't even on my desk. The panic button is locked in a safe in a separate room. I threw away the code. Like, I'm nowhere near the panic button.
Now you lose to Merrimack or Western in this week. We'll go find
then that. Then I have – yes, yes. Then I have to buy a new – then I have to buy a new panic button. yeah, Merrimack is – let me find the KenPom. I think like 320 or something, which is like really, really, really bad.
Yeah. No, you don't want to be 320 out of, what, 330-something?
Where are my big beautiful Merrimack Warriors? Where are they at? Merrimack, they're 311 out of 362. They are 337 in offense. So
sounds like me in my graduating class.
Yikes! They run a zone too, so they're also going to throw kind of a funky defense at Ohio State. Don't know if Ohio's like it's probably going to be a slow paced game. Don't know if Ohio State's going to like score 80 points or anything crazy, but I could see something like say like 70 to like 45. Like
they just run a normal zone though, right? Not the 1-3-1 that they saw from.
Not what Oakland runs. No, Holtman said a few weeks ago that Merrimack runs a little bit of a different zone as well. Not like a typical like 2-3 whatever, but I don't think that Ohio State's going to go crazy on offense, but Merrimack, from the statistics so far this year, from the KenPom metrics, really, really bad offense.
Yeah.
Horrible offense. And Western Michigan is just below them at 322. So
Yeah, we talked about there's tiers in the MAC. I don't want Ohio State to play Kent right now or Toledo or any of those teams. They can play Western. they can play Western.
Last thing on the Buckeyes before we move on to real quick, talk about the Gavitt games, talk about St. John's update. I think since last time we recorded, Jaden Quinton's cut his list to Kentucky and Missouri.
he did that quick.
Yeah, like he was like four schools, and like 2 days later it was two schools.
Yeah, I don't really know what the point of cutting it to four and then two was 48 hours later.
He's like, you guys got 48 hours to put your bids in. How big is the bag?
Yeah.
But I think that was a really like it's a situation where you don't have space for him, but if he committed to Ohio State, you figure it out. Remember when we talked to Chris Holtman in was it July or August we talked to him? And remember I asked him literally that specific situation. I was like, do you recruit with the numbers in mind? Like what I wanted to know was like, do you recruit with the assumption that you're going to lose somebody via transfer? Because we asked Jake Dealer that too, and Dealer wouldn't give us a straight answer. But Chris Holtman literally told us, and if you want to listen to it, go back to August, there's the episode though. He said he will always assume there's going to be some kind of movement via transfer. Like right now, Ohio State is only going to lose two guys to graduation, and they already have two recruits lined up, committed. So if Jaden Quinton's would have joined, then you're assuming somebody transfers. So I just think that's a noteworthy that, like, you know, we ask the hard-hitting questions here, psych. But that in particular, I thought that was a good question because I wanted to know, like, I wanted the head coach to tell us, do you recruit the numbers a little bit higher because you're assuming people are going to transfer? And he said, yeah, I do. I'm going to assume somebody's going to leave. And that's what would have happened. But hey, now Jaden Quinton is probably going to be a Missouri Tiger, and they've got two incoming freshmen for their two graduating spots, and any transfer would open spots up for – I'm sorry, any outgoing transfers would then open up spots for incoming ones.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, like because signing day was a couple of days ago, and people were kind of shitting on the class, and it's like, well, you always say they have no shooters. They brought in what high school experts are calling the best shooter in the class. And they also brought in Colin White, who can shoot the ball at a pretty good, I wouldn't say a high level, but a good level from what I've seen from him. So they did bring in two shooters. And also, they just brought in a class of five guys, and they just brought in another class of four guys. That's nine for my people paying attention. You're never going to have classes back to back to back, unless you're Kentucky, that you just lose all your freshmen every year. You're going to have a smaller class. Not to mention, as we've been singing from the rooftops, and I've seen people really start to catch on, not because of us, but just because it's getting closer, that 2025 class could be real special. So this 2024 class, you just fill a couple holes, get Junie Mobley, the shooter, in, get Colin White, you know, guy with some high upside in. You should still have most of your team from last year. And then 2025 is when you go try to get your Darren Petersons, your Jerry Easters, you know, your top 30 guys in the country. So, Jaden Quaidness would have been great to add to this class, but I don't, you know, they're not going to add anybody else. They're going to have a two-man class, save a couple spots for a transfer to plug a hole, and then, you know, really, really dive into the 2025 class and bring them home. Everything that's, I tell you what, man, I'm never going to get my hopes up because I know what it is, but damn, it sounds like they got a shot at Darren Peterson, and that would be awesome.
Yeah, I haven't seen any updates about Darren Peterson lately. I have definitely seen Michigan State going hard for Jerry Easter.
Yeah, I did see they picked up the pace on that one.
The wording of that was weird, and I apologize. But Tom Izzo was going hard for Jerry Easter. What I meant was Michigan State is putting on the full court press trying to get Jerry Easter. I've seen Jerry Easter retweeting a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like oh, Michigan State offers Jerry Easter, you know, Izzo and so and so are all in person to see Jerry Easter.
It's like how Holtman and the staff treats Peterson. Every time he steps on the court, the entire staff is there.
So I guess my I haven't seen, I guess I'm also not like, I don't like scour the internet, look like I'm not as like plugged in all over Twitter with Ohio State hoops as you are, like of what you see. So I don't know who was like angry at a two-man class. My only response to that would be the only reason you should be upset about their 2024 class being two guys is if you really don't like Roddy Gale and like Bruce Thornton and Felix Akpar. Like, if you don't like those guys, if you think they're not like Big Ten caliber and should be elsewhere, then I think that's fine to complain. But the reason they have a two-man class is because like they are hoping that they have like their foundation for the next three seasons already in place. Mm-hmm. So like they don't need to add another four or five man class.
I'm telling you,
it's not needed. Unless you don't like Bruce and Roddy and Felix, if you don't think that Scotty and Devin and Tayson Chapman are going to be good players, then you could be like, yeah, they're not good. We need more better recruits. But like, if you think that is your foundation moving forward, then you don't need more than two recruits. Honestly, you probably could have also just gone with one because you have a big rotation sitting there that's going to come back next year.
That would be also a hilarious glass half empty take if you're already out on Tayson Chapman, who was a top 30 recruit in the country and hasn't played a game yet. I've seen enough.
Well, exactly. That's why, like, I don't think that there's like the plan clearly is like, hey, we expect
of these seven or eight
man group here, we expect to have like at least six or seven of them back next year, like to play a bigger expanded role. So you don't really need a massive class, but we are running a little long, so I wanted to run through the Gavitt Games mashups because they're pretty much all bangers.
Give me all the matchups, and I'll answer you with a one-word reaction because I don't know all of them off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, as we're recording right now, this game is already happening. It's Michigan-St. John's. Michigan at St. John's, which would be at MSG tonight.
Electric. I'm going to add some context to this one, though, of not one word. Shout out to Juwan Howard. It's very cool. I know he's in the building. They said he's not coaching, but he's in the building. So it sounds like his recovery is going well. So, you know, good for Juwan Howard. Hope to see him back on the sideline soon.
My one word would be Italian. Rick Pitino versus Phil Martelli. Rick Pitino versus Phil Martelli at MSG in New York. inarticulate Italian noises with the hand gesture. Next one is Xavier Purdue, which is also, by the time this episode comes out, this game is going to be over, but it is Xavier at Mackey Monday night.
Zach Edey against Zach Fremantle? I'm in.
I don't think – is Zach Fremantle even playing?
I hope so, or else that That really goes out of the water, doesn't it? Yeah, he's back.
Does he even play? I was looking at Xavier's stats earlier. He hasn't even played this year. Not yet.
Why is he hurt? Oh, he did.
I think he's always hurt.
He did have successful. Yeah, he's going to miss start of the season. Oops. I thought that was last year. I think he's. Oh, he did that last year too. What the hell?
He's always hurt.
Not playing.
He's always hurt.
First part of the season. All right.
He's always hurt.
Zach Edey against nobody because Jack Nungy graduated. So Purdue by
Wisconsin at Providence. The Badgers at the Dunk against Kim English and the Providence Friars.
Okay.
Okay. We got number four.
Okay.
He said that is a basketball game.
That'll happen, I'm sure.
Marquette at Illinois. Number four Marquette at 23 Illinois.
Is Illinois overrated or underrated? Question mark.
This is gonna be probably your favorite one. Iowa at Creighton. 10 p.m. Tuesday.
I can't say the first word that came to my mind. Yeah.
He's like white. He's like white.
It was white. It was white. I think Creighton is one of the top teams in the country. So I hope I don't hope, but I think Creighton's gonna blow them out. But I always looked okay to start compared to other Big Ten teams. So
Georgetown at Rutgers. I think Rutgers has to win that game for sure. After they lost to Princeton, they gotta beat Georgetown at home.
Yeah. Can Rutgers get over the hump of smart basketball teams?
Because
Georgetown's
the last two. We got Butler at Michigan State. I believe that's Friday night. Thad Matta's first trip back to Breslin since he was the coach at Ohio State, I believe. So Thad Matta versus Tom Izzo at Breslin Friday night.
That'll be a AJ Hogard question mark. Are you ready to go?
And then Maryland at Villanova.
I've answered any of these with one word, by the way. So I'm sorry for not doing the game.
A little Northeast showdown in Maryland versus Villanova. If Maryland can't beat Villanova on the road, they'd be 1-3 this year.
Yeah, what the hell, Maryland? Question mark. I had them as the third best team of the conference, and they can't win a game. So, good Lord.
So I saw a tweet earlier that was like, it was just like when the Gavitt games start tonight, and it's just a picture of like 15 John Fantas all sitting together looking at the camera.
Yes, on the same picture.
John Fanta is going to be calling literally every single Gavitt game, and they're all in different cities.
Oh my God! God bless John Fanta. We are currently getting him back on the pod, but friend of the pod, he's the best man. Cleveland guy too. Go Browns!
All right, you got anything else for your scream so I can go watch Michigan and St. John's?
I don't think so. Gunnar Henderson just won AL Rookie of the Year. It's just popping up on my TV screen. So good for him. I'll just talk some Buckeye fans off the ledge real quick. I didn't know how to do this on November 13th. I thought we'd at least wait till January, but calm down. We'll just be all right. I'm not going to promise it's going to be all right, but I'll say it's going to be all right because it's going to be all right.
Yeah, I think that the Big Ten, I'm starting to think.
The Big Ten might
suck. The Big Ten might be stinky.
And I asked you this same question. The question becomes, does that help Ohio State because they're better than we might think, and they'll be able to win some games that we weren't expecting, hence Maryland or something? Or is Ohio State a part of that? Of like we over?
No,
I
think that we have a pretty good grip of what Ohio State is.
Does this not feel like 2018 to you? Remember, only four Big Ten teams made the tournament. I'm not saying this Ohio State team is that good.
I was just saying, I don't think Ohio State's going to go. Yeah, they're not going to go 15-3 in the Big Ten or whatever, but because there's 20 games. But
good point.
I feel like we have had a pretty good grip on what this Ohio State team is going to be, but I think I maybe could have overestimated what some of the other Big Ten teams would be, and it's only through two games, so again, could be completely off. But like, I feel like if you dropped last year's Ohio State team into this year's Big Ten, maybe they have a better record than they did last year. That's what I mean. I think we have a pretty good grip on how good this Ohio State team is, whereas maybe you overestimated Michigan State a little bit. Maybe I overestimated Maryland a little bit. Maybe I underestimated Illinois a little bit.
I tell you who looks, and they're playing right now, so we'll see. But Michigan's looked really good. So we'll see. I think Wisconsin looked good as well against Tennessee. That's a very tough matchup for them. I think Tennessee is the best team in the SEC with A&M kind of hot on their heels. So I think that was a good showing for Wisconsin. They just didn't hit enough shots down the stretch. But, yeah, I don't. We'll see. It's really tough. I mean, we just Ant Wright put out his top 10 power rankings, and he has Ohio State at 10 behind Minnesota. So I hope that's inaccurate. I guess yeah, like if you're going if you're going off like strictly how they've looked this season, all right. But I don't know about that one.
Ant Wright was on a podcast. He was on Mark Titus' podcast last week. Yes, and he said the way Michigan is looking right now, he's like, I think that they have a pretty good chance to get a double bye in the Big Ten tournament. So, I mean, I guess anything is possible, but Michigan was picked to finish like 11th or something in the Big Ten. I think he is drinking the maize and blue Kool-Aid real heavy.
I mean, of course, and right, former, you know, Michigan player. So,
right.
I think he actually does do a pretty good job, though, of staying fairly unbiased, especially with his he kind of trolls like college football stuff, but like college basketball, he tends to be pretty unbiased. But, you know, I like his content. But yeah, I did see that. And I was I hope he's wrong.
Yeah. He was on Titus's podcast. I was following along. I was listening and I was like, okay, like everything checks out. But then when he said, yeah, I think there's a real good chance they could get a double bye. I was like, okay. I guess, sure.
As the crow flies, though, right now, Monday, November 13th, 7:07, they're beating St. John's. So we'll see if that holds. That'd be a good win for them. Although St. John's hasn't looked amazing this year. So,
yeah, I got that St. John's Villanova Purdue parlay I got to get to. All right. Thank you for listening. If you have lasted all the way to this point, we appreciate you listening. We hope that you've had a great first week of the college basketball season. If you found us on Land Grant Holy Land, make sure to also subscribe on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your music and podcasts so that you can get notified when our episodes, as well as all of the other podcasts in the Land Grant Podcast Network are released. We are putting out, not us, just us, but the entire Land Grant Podcast Network. It's like 2 to 3 podcast episodes a day. Like the content machine is absolutely rolling right now. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, obviously football is in the prime time. So you'll get all the football content plus our basketball content plus Thomas Costello's women's basketball content. Obviously, the women's basketball team, very talented, very good. He does the best job covering them on the beat. I don't think it's close, honestly. So you get all that content as well. We have him on our pod all the time, and it's fun to talk to him. You can follow me at Justin_Golba. I think it's underscore. If you want to follow the Bucketheads account and watch me make people mad for taking tweets too literally, that's at BucketheadsLGPN. And Connor, where are you?
Mine is at Lamons_Connor. Justin will argue with you. He will entertain you if you want to pick a fight. I will not entertain people if they want to just pick a fight with me. I will talk hoops and I will tell you what I'm seeing with my eyeballs. I will not entertain the idiots. But if you want to just have an argument with somebody, go argue with Justin, because I would not respond to some of the people that you respond to. But
Connor, I don't. So that's
all. God bless you for feeding them, though.
It's really fun.
All right, we're out of here. We'll see you next week.